This week's episode of Gallifrey Public Radio discusses sensitive subject matter and may use explicit language. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to episode 51 of Gallifrey Public Radio. This week we continue our journey down the rabbit hole as we discuss day two of Torchwood, Children of Earth. But first, your hosts. I'm Jay Whitten.
Are we talking adult like Torchwood or adult like Cinemax after 11 p.m.?
And with me are Melissa Mazza.
I demand to be referred to as Sagacity from now on.
And Keir Hansen.
The jockstrap of Rassilon is formidable and large.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we give in anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 51 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we descend slowly into madness at the hands of Russell T. Davies. Come along, why don't you? We are proceeding further into what is going to be increasingly one of the dumbest ideas we've had on Gallifrey Public Radio, which is to moment by moment, painful second by second, and frame by frame, take apart Children of Earth, the third season of the Torchwood series. Arguably one of the best and worst pieces of script writing ever.
Oh,
joining me as always in the GPR studios, Melissa. Melissa, how are you, dear?
I'm good. How are you?
Outstanding. And over in the corner, we've let him back in the room, is Jay. Hello, Jay.
Hello.
All right. No more adopting kittens. You're at your limit.
Yeah. Damn Skippy.
Okay. Well, sorry for missing last week. Had a little bit of Dragon Conage to get involved with. Totally worth it. I did make a point on the flight back. I was not going to watch this on the flight down because I didn't want to just make the entire first day down in Atlanta absolutely suck. But I did watch it on the flight home because I was already feeling crappy enough for leaving. So I figured why not make it worse and watch Children of Earth. Before we get into this, there was one thing that I want to address, and this is probably kind of a valid point of discussion to put across as we get deeper and deeper into the episodes that have a harder and harder impact, and that is the people who are fence-sitting about wanting to watch this series in general. We've got circles and social networks of conversation that are still to today, including today, going on about the fact that there are a number of fence sitters trying to determine, based on everything that they've heard, about what is wonderful and what is horrible about this particular, I'll call it a mini series because of how encapsulated it is, that they want to see it, but knowing at least some of the inherent nature of the content, that they don't want to watch it, and the vast majority of them being parents.
Yeah.
I mean, I think honestly, though, if you're a kid, this is like the best series for you. Like we touched on this like briefly last week that, yeah, like it's harsh. It confronts you with a lot of things. But if anything, like, I think if you're a parent, this is like the perfect thing to be like, listen, like, at least the 4, 5, 6 isn't here. Like, you have to clean your room. Like, at least you're not one of the 10% that, right?
Yeah, I would think that, Jay, having, you know, knowing the ages of your kids, and I know that you've watched some Who with them, I'm wondering whether there may be some sort of a an age level where you can say, you know what, I'm going to watch this, and I know it's going to be hard for me because of, you know, putting myself into some of these characters' perspectives, but the way a younger viewer may watch this and just sort of seeing it as, you know, the idea of confronting the villain or the alien threat in this sort of case, and maybe not drawing the same thing from the our children at risk factor, which we'll get into obviously when we start getting into days 3, 4, and 5. Mm-hmm. But we start to get some of the hints of it through this episode, you know, as the puzzle pieces are starting to fall into place. But would you foresee there being a benefit at all to watching it with them, just so that if nothing else, you get this kind of a, I don't know, I'm not going to say like hug them around the neck and hold them closely as you go through this. But, you know, it just, I don't know. I don't even know how to articulate this. The idea of seeing a bit of it through their eyes and how they react to some things to kind of give you a slightly different perspective as a viewer. I don't know whether that would be helpful or harmful or what.
Yeah, I'm not a parent. Like, what do you think as a parent of this?
It's difficult for me to say, just because I mean that I've always had a problem with violence towards kids or babies or anything like that on TV. I mean, I used to love watching CSI when it was still new and fresh. And anytime there was a child within the first 3 minutes of the show, you know, when the crime is discovered or whatever, as soon as I saw a kid, I'm like, nope, done. I can't watch it. And it, I mean, I've watched. I've
the Battlestar Galactica.
The pilot for that. I went through some serious, like, I'm not watching this show ever. And, you know, I mean, that's huge with my group of friends. You know, so sitting down and watching this is difficult because as a parent, it's hard not to automatically put your children in that spot. You know, it's like as a father, my whole life revolves around protecting my kids, you know, doing everything I can to give them the best possible life. So you know, seeing something like that on TV, it bothers me because it's a reminder of all it takes is 1 second for you to blink and something horrible can happen. So sitting and watching something like this and realizing, you know, this is completely out of the parents' control. You know, this is the government that is making these decisions. It's terrifying and it's horrible. And I don't know that sitting there, like looking over at my kids, seeing how they're reacting to it is going to help me at all. I mean, I think it would make it worse. But
yeah,
I mean,
that's the kind of thing that I was wondering because I didn't know whether being able to talk through any of this with them would have its benefits.
I think the best case scenario watching this with a kid would be the fact that they start to become cynical towards the government and seeing that there is corruption and bad decisions can be made. So you have to be very careful with who you give that power to. And I don't think that that is a good thing to introduce at such a young age. Yes, they need to understand that once they get to the point where they can vote, they don't need to know that at 11, 12, 14 years of age. You know, let them have their childhood before you completely ruin it with reality. And I mean, that's what it boils down to, is this is a realistic view on these kind of things. And I think it's a little bit much for kids.
I'm going to have to agree with you because I don't think, like, you know, everything you're saying, like, makes sense with older kids, like, if they can be cynical about the government. But you're not going to want someone who's still a child finding any realism in these episodes, you know, like that's just going to lead to it, like, you know, I mean, like the government sells out the most vulnerable people in society. Yes, it's a lesson for us all to learn. And that's why we're talking about Children of Earth now instead of some random Doctor Who episode. But if you're going to actually like introduce your real live children to this, like really, really think about it.
Definitely proceed with caution because, you know, I mean, my oldest kid is 11 years old. You know, I want to give him a couple more years of sitting there on the 4th of July. America, fuck yeah. You know, I don't want him to automatically, like, as soon as he sees a politician on TV, be like, you'd sell me out just to get your own ass out of the fire, wouldn't you? You know, I don't want that for my kids yet.
I've got enough cynicism in the house for the rest of the family.
Exactly. So back to the original topic, if you are on the fence about the series, it can go either way. I completely understand both sides of the argument because it is it runs you through the ringer emotionally, mentally, everything. But it is a good reminder to take a look at your surroundings and not take things for granted.
I would imagine, just based on my own assumption, I would think 15, 16 would be about the earliest I would want to see any younger viewer sitting down to something like this.
And I mean, in case someone's listening to this and they actually have never seen Children of Earth or like what we're like, these episodes are not like too scary for a kid or like, you know, like a horror movie or something. Like they're too much of like, this is reality. Like your government will just throw you under the bus. Like that's what we're talking about. This, you're absolutely right. Like 15, 16, like, is the age that you can actually start to appreciate that. It's not that kids are too young to get that, you know, it's not too scary or too, like, but the reason that we think that this is such great storytelling is that it is so real, so true to life, and so, like, it's scary in a way that's scary to us as adults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, let's, for the sake of just kind of keeping us dialed into this particular episode for today. We're not going to we're going to try and keep ourselves restrained so that we're not discussing the entire series as a chunk. It's difficult to do because of the fact that, once the pace starts to pick up on these things, it just steamrolls.
Yeah.
And the only thing that's keeping you from just watching it straight through on a solid block is because, every hour or so you might need to refill your drink or go pee. So this is, thank God for credits every 55 minutes.
Yeah.
But in this particular episode, we're just dealing with a couple of key points that I know that as we were discussing before we started recording, that we wanted to go through, and that has to do with looking at the extents or limits to which Jack's regeneration ability is possible, bringing Reese into the fold. Finally,
yeah.
Even though he didn't realize that he's kind of been a pawn for a lot of episodes in the series prior and didn't really realize it, but now he's actually, his eyes are getting opened to the fullest extent of what Torchwood requires.
He has his own kind of Rory moment in this episode too.
That's awesome.
Oh yeah. So there's really two sides to this story. We've got, at the end of last week's episode, we've got Jack getting blown up along with the entirety of the Torchwood hub. And so this episode kind of focuses on Gwyn and Reese, and then separately Yanto, all trying to rescue what is left of Jack at the beginning of the episode. Mm-hmm. And then obviously the governmental side of it, with Frobisher and the Prime Minister and Lois Habiba and all of that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, this is about the most blowed up we've ever dealt with Jack before.
Yeah, I think if you get nothing out of this episode, that is it. This is the worst we've seen Jack. What can he come back from?
I think the answer is yes.
Yeah, slowly regenerating Jack on the slab there, pretty gross.
Yeah.
Got a little, first time I saw this, I got a little herpy in my throat, okay, effects team, nice job, guys. Made me a little nauseous, awesome. I'm sorry, to use proper English, I got a little nauseated.
Nauseated.
And flipping to the other thing that we were mentioning about bringing Reese on as sort of a B team here, I was glad to see the fact that as this was being done, it also really solidified the relationship between Reese and Gwyn. It got so much stronger in my eyes. Not that it had been weak before, but I think having him at her side for more of these critical moments just endeared him even more to me as a character. If I didn't love the guy already, this just, it went through the roof.
Yeah, because I mean, there was definitely that moment when, I think it was in series two, when Gwyn, confesses that she was unfaithful to him, and then gives him the forget me pill or whatever, and I seriously did not think it was going to last after that. I was like, okay, you saw how he reacted when you admitted that you did so. And I really thought that that was the beginning of the end. And so then to see them kind of, stick through it and get, he accepts Torchwood, he, becomes a part of the family, though, peripherally. Yeah. And then you get to this episode where you see the two of them really mesh and really come together and act like a team. It definitely had that moment of, okay, these two are good. It was very reminiscent of the episode, Amy's Choice of Doctor Who, when, she chooses Rory over the possibility of living. Yeah. It had that same kind of effect where it's like, okay, I know that they are together no matter what now.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. It's always the girl's choice. Like, I'm really glad you brought this up because I was thinking that the whole time of, we know with dramatic irony that Gwyn has not been faithful to Reese, and yet it was so unsatisfying to me personally when she actually does admit it to him, and, she admits it, and there's a fight, and then he can't remember any of it, and, it's all very convenient, and, So the fact that they are... we've talked about this before, how Torchwood is like the grown-up version of Doctor Who. Like, Doctor Who is very grown-up, but it's got, a lot of different elements, whatever. Like, this one is like unabashedly, like, don't let your children watch it. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really like, we're coming back to that of like, we never actually got to see their relationship progress. We know that they're still together. We know that,
Owen.
Yeah, Owen. I'm like, another really Welsh name. We got Reese and Owen. Like, but, God bless Owen. Like, I really liked him. But just the fact that I saw Children of Earth. I watched Torchwood years ago, and I remember when we talked about that we were doing this season. What came to my mind was, oh, what is the episode with Gwen and Reese in the potato truck? And, like, that's not, like, a major scene or anything. Like, nothing, like,
I
you know, nothing.
I love the potato truck scene.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. To me, as a girl who sees things as very, like, emotional and all about relationships and stuff, like, everything hinged on that. So I'm like, yes, we're getting to, like, they're in the potato truck soon. Like, so, yes, like, absolutely. Like, we're back to those two and, like, you know, what they're fighting for. And everything, and if this just goes back to, like, Torchwood may not have been the best series before, like, yes, it filled our Who void in our lives or whatever, like, and there was some, you know, some actors I like to see, and I'm glad that I got to see them, but it wasn't until we actually got to season 3 with Children of Earth that it's fulfilling that storytelling need of, like, oh shit, what is going to happen next? Like, where's their relationship going to go? So I think that the theme of this, because last week, you know, it was all setting up, it's setting up all the players, putting them on the chessboard the right way or whatever. But this one is all about relationships and family and all that good stuff.
So.
Yeah. So we're definitely going to get into the family aspect, but I'm really glad that you touched on, like, the whole Reese and Gwen, like, you know.
Well, that kind of bounces from that, because, you know, you bring up the idea that there is this this family undercurrent, and I don't know if it's the right episode yet to really start to talk about Frobisher's family yet. And again, I'm trying to keep it
now. Yeah.
Yeah, they're starting to, but we don't really, you know, and I know we're looking, we tend to look at the series as a whole, but it's really, you know, day 3 or so when we really start to see that emerge as an essential component here. But on the family front, the only other thing that I really wanted to make sure that we gave some credence to tonight was getting this little bit of an insight into Yanto's family with his sister and brother-in-law, because I freaking love these people.
Oh yeah, you can't
I
help but
love
them.
They are crass. They are, you know, just salt of the earth, kind of, you know, up lower class. I don't know if they fall on a caste system, but they are just, they're straightforward, pure characters. Yes. No hidden agendas. They are paycheck to paycheck living, kind of, you know, essentially blue collar. And what you get from them in terms of what they express is genuinely them. And I absolutely love them for it. Especially Johnny, the fat bastard. You know, the type when he can go out and he can just rally people up to go shake up the cops or whatnot because he feels it's necessary. You know, I love him. And I love the fact that Yanto is... cares about them, but is still at the same time a little bit embarrassed by them, and that's a great dynamic. And I just wish that we had had a chance to be introduced to them long before this series came about.
Mm-hmm. And that's definitely the power of their acting, of these people who have only been in a couple of episodes, a couple of scenes. Like, you know, how often, how much time could they have actually spent with the crew and everything? And yet, it just sheds so much light on Yanto and his motivations, and it just... I feel like this episode really sets up that theme of family, and we see just how invested everyone is in their family just because of Rhiannon is her name, I guess, and her husband. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we see these just silly people who could be anywhere. Like, yeah, this is, you know, in a certain part of the world, and we're in a different part of the world, but we all know people like them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the thing, is that these people are, you know, we've got, like we said before, you know, you've got Gwen, who has been unfaithful in her relationship, who's covered it up. You've got, you know, Yanto, who tries to hide his past and pretend like he's coming from somewhere that he's not. Jack, who has committed every debauchery that you've ever could ever possibly think of, and then some that have yet to be invented. And then you've got these people who are, you know, like you said, Kier, completely honest and truthful in who they are. They're not the greatest people in the world, but they are who they are. And that's a breath of fresh air in this group of people.
Salt of the earth, good way to describe
it. Yeah,
them.
definitely. So, wait.
Now, on a progression of the plot standpoint, as far as the 4, 5, 6 are concerned, the one major development is the fact they are now building the tank.
Mm-hmm.
and they're discussing all the combination of chemicals that are going into it, and theorizing as to what it could be involved for, because they can tell obviously from all the combinations of nitrogen and sulfur and all the things that are in there that it's poisonous, whatever it is. I think they telegraph a certain amount of this. I mean, I know when I was first watching it, just on the basic construct of everything that they were putting together with this, you could tell this had to do something with... I was drawing a lot of parallels with Independence Day at the time. I don't really know why. I kind of got connected to that whole segment with, seeing Brent Spiner being held up against the glass and speaking through with the psychic tentacles and whatnot, die thing. I felt that coming. But watching Decker in particular,
That guy is a creep. I mean, you can tell that from the first
dude.
Oh man,
couldn't stand him. In fact, if there was anyone that from the second or third scene that they were involved with that I could like, could dislike as much as the Prime Minister, it would have been Decker.
Yeah.
I don't know. I give him credit for editing or clipping these episodes as they did, because this was, watching the nice cliffhanger at the end of the first, obviously with the explosion, the hub, meeting its demise, along with, bits O'Jack everywhere. This one, finishing off the way they did with him walking up, Decker walking up to the glass and breathing on it and doing that whole thing. It was very, the creep factor in that alone, just as if,
worse than Skinless Jack.
I think so, because I couldn't really tell whether, chime in on this, guys, because I kind of felt like somebody knows something more that's going on here. But on first watch at this episode, I couldn't tell who was the one who had all the previous knowledge.
All I was going to contribute before was, in case anyone doesn't know, Decker was the guy who breathed on the glass. But you got that. So
I
didn't get the creep factor out of that.
Yeah, but was he doing that because he knew something more and like he was embracing this, and that was like almost like a my precious kind of a thing? Or whether it was just the sheer fascination of a scientist who has been given this great unknown, and that he's reveling in the mystery of it, that he's waiting to unravel.
That's what I got out of it personally. But he does become more sinister as the series progresses just because of that. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have to be like some kind of crazy character that was written that way. Mm. We see these things, and yeah, we get these like creepy little things that, because the three of us are good people. we're getting some red flags or whatever. But as far, like, one of the things that makes this just such great storytelling is that he doesn't do anything wrong at all, ever. And then by the end of it, though, you can kind of see, like, okay, some people were good people in this and some people weren't.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know. The pace with which this thing ramps up on all the levels, in terms of the passion levels of the characters, and I'm using passion just in terms of like the depth to which they are carrying their emotional constructs, whether that be for emotions of positivity or panic or whatever it is, whatever it is that they're feeling in exponentially increasing levels. The family factors get even stronger, the hate factors get stronger, the mistrust factors get stronger, all of these things are what, to me personally, had me hooked by the first episode. Getting into the second episode, and now I'm starting to get hints that there are far more sinister things going on. We're starting to drift into the government mistrust factors, obviously, because we're seeing, this is one of the first moments where we see, at the Prime Minister's hands, Frobisher is being set up to be a total patsy. More so later, obviously, but even right now, he is already rolling over, as he's being instructed and being a good little puppet.
Well, and you get that even in day one, when the Prime Minister, you know, tells him, I don't want my name attached to the blank sheet. And Frobisher's like, well, I guess it's on me then. Yep, just don't tell me about it. You know, it's, you can tell that that's what's going on right from the beginning. But yeah, it definitely does get ramped up in this episode, and it just continues to get worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
Well, let's take, I guess, the last thing that I figured I'd like to be able to touch on with you guys on this particular episode, it has absolutely nothing to do with plot development. This is the only thing that took me out of the episode. I should say the only scene, because there's components within this sort of extended scene that at that point I said, all right, I did put my sense of realism on the hook when I walked in the door and sat down to watch this, but you're losing me at this point. And that was Yanto driving a forklift and dropping the concrete block into a quarry.
Well, I mean, come on. Yanto's a badass. I mean, there's no way around that.
That's fine. And I'm going to take absolutely nothing away from Yanto's badassery. But unless he is like in the Matrix and can download the instructions on how to operate heavy machinery, complex heavy machinery, and then Jack's regenerative powers, after building himself back from a pile of Harkness bits and being sealed in an airtight concrete slab, then getting dropped, what, 40 stories or so?
Yeah, about that.
So there's a little smashed upness that we would have to deal with. I know personally, just without being surrounded in concrete, just jumping down a 40-story hole would cause a little bit of a sprained ankle or two. But unless he's now recovering hella fast, I think they kind of got us a little quickly to naked, dusty Jack walking off to the Land Rover.
Well, I think the only reason you even bring that up is because of the writing. Like, we could definitely suspend our disbelief if it was like, oh, Jack survives everything. Like, here Yanto is dropping him 40 stories. But they made, like, a big deal of it with the writing. Yeah, and they were like, and I forget, but, like, it was like they were trying to decide, like, what to do. And then Yanto was like, I got this. Like, and it was just like, really? Like, in real life, that might not work. Like, please don't watch this thing.
I would have been okay with, you know, the whole forklift thing, the dropping him, but I would have accepted that they had to pick him up and carry him out of that mess.
Okay, I've got plugs for both your plot holes here. We didn't see how long Yanto sat on the forklift before he pulled the slab.
The manual.
I mean, he was on there for 45 minutes, you know, like, no, wait, that's backwards, never mind. You know, he could have been sitting there for who knows how long. So, you know, he got it all figured out before he got there. You know, and then, you know, dropping him in the quarry, well, I mean, they were at the top of the quarry. They had to get all the way down there and find a car in the meantime. So he could have been laying there fixing his sprained ankles in that time. It was just the way that it was edited. So, you know, expand your horizons, Kier. God.
You know what? I'm going to let it go.
Come on. We're Whovians. We are good at this kind of thing. Yeah.
This is true. And it's Jack, so hey. Well, so, were there other points that you guys wanted to hit as far as, you know, some of the things that we were given in this episode or some of the things that were taken away?
I just wanted to go back to the whole family thing of, yeah, you know, whatever you guys wanted to say about that. But that, like, my notes are just full of that, of how, like, we're really introduced to these people's families and we really start to, even if they weren't people, you know, if you had been watching Torchwood and you loved the characters already, a lot of, like, you know, a lot of their backstories and stuff were just inserted into this season. And in my opinion, it actually worked really well and gave a lot of humanizing, stabilizing, you know, background information to these characters that we love so much. So, but obviously we know with some foresight that they're just doing it to mess with us and make us, like, love these people. And then,
yeah.
So what do you guys have to say about that?
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, that we get nothing from Jack or Yanto throughout the first two series of Torchwood. And then in day one, it's like, oh, hey, look, Jack's got a daughter and a grandson, you know, and here, let's make you care about them instantaneously. Hey, Yanto's got this whole family of complete awesome people. You know, and it does. I mean, if it could be very cheesy the way they crammed it in there in one episode, but they did it really, really well. And you really start to care for these people almost instantaneously. You know, I mean, we've already talked about Yanto's family, but then, you know, Jack's daughter and his grandson that doesn't even know who, you know, how he's really related to Jack, and the torment, Jack. Yeah, the torment that his daughter has to go through in keeping that from him and seeing her dad, you know, stay the same age while she gets older, you know, and they really fleshed out those characters in such a way that it made them feel real and not just, hey, we need family members in this episode.
I think it has something to say with the way that this that these episodes are not only written, but the way that they're edited and edited down. It doesn't give you the time to look at it and say, wait a second, no, how come we never heard about that? Okay, I can't talk about that now because there's other stuff happening. It comes at you with such reckless abandon that, you know, maybe after watching and 2 weeks later, once you recover from everything you've seen, you can start saying, oh, wait a second, how come Yanto never really mentioned his sister before? Or how come we didn't get any of this insight into some of Jack's human past here on Earth before or anything? And it just seems like they were kind of throwing this at us. They did not even give us the opportunity to process that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Because obviously it was written fast-paced, edited fast-paced, and the characters stood out well enough, with credit to Davies for his writing on it, that they took that idea of sort of dropping the needle on the record when it's already at full spin and just accepting it because the characters are just that solid. So we're not concerned about the fact that, you know, we've never met them before. We just accept.
Well, even going back to Frobisher and his family, they're not even major characters at this point, but I really start to like them in this episode. I think this is the one where the girls are like making yeah. fun of the whole thing, and they're like, we want a pony. And just such a, you know, couple lines that they get, and it's just so endearing, and you get this sense of their family, and they, like, you know, so absolutely this is going to work with characters that we already know and love, like Yanto.
Yeah. It's, I can't say enough about this series. Honestly, it is the best and worst that I've seen out of a lot of things in a long time. You know, there's a lot of people that'll say, you know, I'm trying to get into a new series on Netflix and I don't really know what to watch. Well, okay, let me give you a long setup version. I want you to watch these two series first, which are fun, adventure, shoot 'em up, got some aliens, got some sci-fi. And I know a number of people who backed into Doctor Who by watching Torchwood first, and we've talked about this before. Torchwood is something you can just jump into and just accept it, not knowing a tinker's cuss about the Doctor. But the only reason why I'm suggesting this to people is because I want them to get to Children of Earth.
Yeah.
Because this is now, you've been conditioned, you've seen some horrible things, you've lost a few friends along the way in the first two series, so, you know, you're accustomed to taking, you know, a couple of punches to the gut. Now they're going to come at you even harder and faster. And some of the darker subjects, like the meat episode and things like that.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, that one's messed up.
Which are like, you know, and they're disturbing topics. You're like, okay, well, you know, they're not really pulling too many punches here. They're actually, you know, they're pointing a mirror back pretty cleanly at us, and we're going to have to accept this. Now that mirror has become a microscope, and it hurts. But I think it's absolutely worth going through, as horrible as it may be at moments. I think it's a worthwhile journey.
See, I mean, I always think, like, what if someone is listening to this who has never seen the series, and they're going to be like, what is this horrible show these people are talking about that's going to, like... like, personally, like, as a vegetarian, I made it through meat okay. And then you get to these, and it's like, well, would I do this? Okay. Like, let's take it a couple inches further. Would I do that? Okay. Well, what, like... And it really, like, it messes with you.
That's one of the really inherent points about this particular series out of the show, is the what would you do factor. There's this entire thing is one big ball of moral dilemmas. Mm-hmm. And it really has very little to do with the action. It has very little to do with the aliens. It has very little to do with sci-fi tech or any of those things. And it really comes down to, this is the most human of any of the arcs that this show has touched on. I think when it comes down to it, as far as being able to just completely step away from the science fiction aspect of it and really become a drama. Yeah. This is one big fat bag of moral quandaries.
And that's one reason why I don't bother trying to introduce people to Torchwood. I throw them straight into this. I'm like, okay, sit down, watch this. All you need to know going into it, Jack can't die. It's all you need to know going in. It's impossible to kill him. Go. That's all you need going into it, really. Because, I mean, they really do. I mean, yes, you can get a lot more out of it if you have the backstory, but you don't need it.
Yeah. I mean, even if you think, like, oh, yeah, like, Gwen cheated on Reese, like, all you need to know is they're in a relationship. Like, that, you know, right. That shit happens. You know? You're right.
Do you guys have experiences of people who went into this just not seeing any Torchwood and went straight to this series?
Yeah, actually, my wife. When we were getting ready to watch this, I was like, hey, I need to sit down and I need to watch day one. You know, sit here and watch it with me. And she's watched Doctor Who, obviously. She knows who Captain Jack is, but that was it. That's the only thing that she's got. So she came into it. She sat down. She's like, okay, who's that? I'm like, that's Gwen. She's part of Torchwood. Who's that? That's Yanto. That's Jack's boyfriend, part of Torchwood. And then we just went from there. And she, you know, then we proceeded to watch day two on the same night, and then day three. And then I got home from work after having a crappy day, and she's like, I want to watch day four. I'm like, seriously, did you hear a rumor that I slept with your sister? Why are you doing this to me? But yeah, so without having any prior knowledge of Torchwood, she went through Children of Earth and had no problem with it, and is actually wanting to watch Miracle Day now.
Wow.
I still haven't seen Miracle Day. So, back to your original question, Kier, I actually know people who have not seen Torchwood but have seen Miracle Day, and I'm not really sure how that would work. And no, I'm trying not to get too deep into that because, like, I still have not seen it yet.
I think, and you'll get this when you get the opportunity. Miracle Day, I'll grouse about it on certain points. That was one where I think the only thing personally that I feel held it together was the fact that Jane Espenson, as the principal writer for it, had some things that she wanted to put on the table that I think she did a great job with. I think its detriment, and not to take us too far away from where, you know, what we've been discussing, its detriment is the fact that it was an American production at an American pace with American cinematic elements.
But it was still Jane Espenson, right?
Yep. Uh-huh. But she wasn't editing, so, you know, it's, you know, starts with her material, but it got a very Hollywood edit.
Personally, for me, I know the whole story. I know what happens, and I just have not actually watched it yet. So what you're saying is, like, that's what I've heard. So, but I will watch it. Don't think that I completely suck and I don't like Doctor Who because I've not seen Miracle Day. It's just you're kind of scaring me off with that.
The first time I watched it, I hated it. Hated it. And I watched each one with my arms crossing, sitting through the thing, because it was bothering me that this was not BBC Wales. And this was not a BBC production. And it doesn't feel like one. And the characters behave differently. And the scenes are set up differently, and there's ridiculously long car chases and things like that. I'm like, this is not my show. And in retrospect,
I mean, part of that is the fact that you're just coming straight off of Children of Earth, which is some of the best TV you can find out there. And then you know, you get something that's subpar even for regular Torchwood, and it's going to be that much more of a disappointment.
Yeah, I guess it was really just a matter of, you know, I came into it with way too many expectations. You know, the bar being raised as it was coming off of COE, I had already had concerns about the fact that it was being all shot and produced and everything in the States. I had faith in Espenson to put together a story that was going to be compelling, and it was. The story, the themes and the actual plot structure for the series is great. It is as close to a Children of Earth kind of a holy crap, you know, this is what humanity is capable of kind of a thing, especially the whole government involvement aspect. So if you keep that filter or that lens on it, it makes for a far more enjoyable series, which is why the second time through, I looked at it in that perspective, and I got it. But the first time through, I was coming into it saying, you know, this is just, you know, this is Harkness Goes Hollywood. And I just couldn't, I couldn't accept it because I was just getting so angry at the, at little details.
So now what do you think about in relation to that, Children of Earth? Like, the, those little details and the, like, it, you know, like, is, if you had never seen this, would that be something that you would recommend to someone? Like, I mean, I, like, I, we just talked about this.
Meaning, if it,
bit,
if it,
like,
went, if it went from, like, Series 2 to Miracle Day and Children of Earth was never produced?
I mean, actually, that's not what I was asking at all, but that, that gets the heart of it, yeah. But...
Well, I think to a certain degree, yeah, because, and you'll note this when you get a chance to see it. I don't even want to call it season four because it isn't really. It's series three, you know, as I was watching it, especially when I got right to the end of it, literally when the credits rolled on the last episode, I sat back, you know, finally exhaled and said, and at the time when I was seeing it, you know, I don't know what the delay time was and how long it was off of the live broadcasts, but I'm like, to date, that is the best television I've ever seen, hands down. Best television I've ever seen put together. And setting that bar is just... Because as far as they knew, that's that was the end of Torchwood. Literally, yeah. They were wrapping it up. You know?
Yeah, and that's...
When
that's,
they decided they were going to come back. Go ahead, Jay.
I was going to say, that's what everybody thought, was that, you know, Children of Earth was it. They didn't think they were going to get anything else, so Miracle Day was just a nice surprise of, hey, we get to do more.
Yeah. And that's why a lot of people were able to accept it, because, like, you know, any additional content is great content, and I'm going to take it. And that's fine. And honestly, and I will admit, as grumpy as I was the first time through, when I watched it a second time, and I was able to... It's just like when I go to see... I go to see Broadway and off-Broadway productions. And because of the fact that, you know, I've been on stage, backstage, directing, running set crew, and all those things, because I've had all the technical aspects on a lot of shows, the first time when I go and I see a production on a main stage, I have to end up seeing shows twice. Because the first time I sit there and I pick apart that light's out of focus, that sound cue was late, you know, that, you know, their costume's messed up or whatever
it is.
Don't
ever be in a movie. It'll ruin everything for you forever.
Fine. You know, I've done little indie, you know, shots and whatnot, but as far as stage work, and that's what has to happen. I've got to watch it once and take it apart. It's the inverse of my TV experience. Typically, when I watch things on television, especially when it's something like New Who content, and the three of us have talked about this before, first time we see an episode, it's the you just want to see. Show me shiny, 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 shiny. And then we go back and watch it again and say, oh, wait a second, and you start to pick at the threads. This, for some reason, was entirely inverted because of the fact that they had handed me this golden basket of awesome and said, this is the last you're going to get. We put this together for you, and it's amazing. And it's going to scare you, and it's going to hurt you, and you're going to love it and hate it, and you're going to hold it close to your chest, and it's going to eat its way through your chest, and it's going to be the most wonderful and horrible experience you've ever had for 5 days. Here.
Very.
And you go through all it. You go through it all, and it sucks. But you embrace the scar tissue afterwards because it's been this great viewing experience. I should say a literal term. It should be an awesome, because it instills you with awe. Okay, in the, you know, textbook definition of the term. But and then years go by, and you're just kind of saying, "Wow, you know, I remember I sat down and I watched, you know, Children of Earth. Wow, and I've introduced so many people to Torchwood, and even I've introduced people to Doctor Who as a result of just being so passionate about these five episodes and whatever." And then you hear this rumor mill that, "Hey, we're bringing it back." Like, how could you do that? That's like bringing Firefly back with 3/4 of the cast dead. And you know, you didn't know what to make of it. And as they were going through all of the, you know, the news releases about things going along as they were in production, you're thinking, oh, all right, they're setting it in the States. Okay, I'm getting some idea what the plot's about. Okay, with new characters to meet. I'm going to accept this. As long as I got Gwen and Jack, I think we're going to be okay. Oh, we got Reese too? Okay, great. And we're going to be okay. But it nagged at the back of my head that this was not... I was already prepared to just bittersweet walk away from Torchwood. And when they brought it back... I know this has become a Miracle Day discussion. I'm sorry.
You could even take this back to Children of Earth, though. Like, you know, I was done with Torchwood, and then suddenly they just destroyed everything I ever cared about, ever.
Yeah. If the end of Series 2 didn't hurt enough, you know, losing Tosh, losing Owen, you know, and all the pain involved with that. I don't even know where I can go with this. Other than the fact that, you know, speaking to you, Melissa, about Miracle Day, I think just I might be able to help steer you in saying, don't worry about the Americanization, because that had to happen in order for the show to continue or to have a next breath. And I'm picturing Jack. You know, there's your next breath. Sorry, really bad visual pun. But I think because of the fact that it is Espenson and she's a goddess, and the fact that it does have some of the core components of what made Children of Earth as powerful as it was, the disturbing aspects, those are in there. If you appreciate that and you can really kind of focus on that, you get some very good things out of the series.
I mean, maybe in a few weeks we'll be here talking about Miracle Day, you know? Like, I want to reiterate, I actually have it downloaded. Like, I have it on my computer, and I'm refusing to watch. This isn't me being like, oh, like, the only Doctor I know is David Tennant, so I'm not going to watch Fourth Doctor. Like, no. Like, this is me being like, I've heard some really bad things about this, and I'm really nervous about, like, finally committing to... So, but, like, you know, as you guys said, Children of Earth is arguably some of the greatest writing in television ever, and the UK seems to have a lot more freedom to do that, so if they can start from that place and then go to some kind of like Americanized car chases and everything, like that's not that bad. Like that could be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, being less than Children of Earth is still really good. You know, I mean, that's like saying that's the worst Pixar movie ever made. You're still in the top 10. You know, it's that's some high praise.
Well, that you brought up a great point, Melissa, and it's something that maybe you'll be able to speak more about it once you get an opportunity to watch it. In terms of what the BBC has taken risks in airing, in terms of the way that they've run certain series and some of the topics, or just the way that they approach certain subjects, they can take some risks that a U.S. production company, even if it's, correct me if I'm wrong, it was Stars, right? Stars put together?
Yes, it was definitely Stars.
even cable networks would have been a little hesitant about. But because Children of Earth took some of the subject matter that they did and the risks that they did and put it out there bluntly, I think that allowed Miracle Day to be, by U.S. standards, a very risky concept to carry through. And it is. And I think you'll get that when you get a chance to watch it. It definitely is some dark material. But I think it's just looking at it from one side of the pond's, I don't know if I can say restrictions or standards or anything like that. That's not the right term. But their idea of what of taking that sort of literary risk would be versus another.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's one of the reasons why they played down a lot of Jack's promiscuity or omnisexuality and things like that in Miracle Day, because again, how's it going to play? So hopefully those barriers are starting to break down now too, just because I know when they were talking with the panel, got a chance to at DragonCon, Eve Miles made her first DragonCon appearance there, and she was totally giddy. She was off her rocker on the panels there, and of course it was the Barrowman show. He was just, you know, devouring the desk the entire time. But they kept alluding to the fact that they would be ready to go forward with a fifth season at the drop of a hat. One of the panels had Espenson sitting on it, and she kind of fumbly discussed the fact that she had not written anything, but had ideas too, that if she was ever given the green light, she already had the seed of an idea that she would want to run with if she were given the opportunity. So they were all being very dodgy about it, except for Yanto. You know, they were taking questions from the panel, and Gareth's only, they were getting asked in line, oh, if you were have the opportunity to be able to do anything more with your character or put them in another situation, you know, what would you love to do? And Gwen said, you know, or that Eve Miles said something to the effect of, you know, she would want to be, she wanted to be able to, like, push the maternal role farther because, you know, her being a mother now and everything herself, you know, she'd love to be able able to keep that power mama dynamic going kind of thing. And they got to Garrett and he said, I'd like to breathe. Womp, womp. And all of his responses were all like everything. Like I forget like half the stuff they were asking the panel, but all of his ones were like, I'd like to be alive. Sorry.
So news.
I have been sort of completely off the radar this past week with everything going on. So thankfully, Melissa came to the rescue on being able to pull together some of the news points, because all I was doing was walking around going, dude, that's the greatest cosplay I've ever seen. Oh my God. These guys with like their perfect Daft Punk masks and whatnot. I was like, oh, this is just a total squeeze fest for the past 7 days. So sorry, I'm back.
Yeah, we're all jealous of Keir, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, slightly.
Well, that's next year, kids. Buy your tickets this week. If you buy them this week for next year, they're half price. $65 for 4 days in 6 hotels. Come on.
So the first article that we've got is actually Catherine Tate has come out. And I mean, we've got a lot of people saying that they would love to come back on the show, or they'd love to be a part of it, and I'd love to write for it, and this, that, and the other. Catherine Tate said that she would be happy to return to Doctor Who.
Catherine Tate, someone we actually care about. So.
Yeah, exactly. This is kind of a bittersweet thing. I would love to see her return, but if she wouldn't be opposite of Tennant, it wouldn't be the same. I mean, it was the chemistry between the two of those that made it such a great thing.
Well, and even in that particular interview, she made a comment like, is there even another Doctor? Referring to someone other than Tennant. So.
Right.
Yeah.
And
she can get away with that statement.
Yeah, and then the fact that she went away in such a heartbreaking fashion, I'd hate to see her come back and have them retcon that, because it was such a great exit and so tragically heartbreaking that you couldn't have her come back, and I don't know, it just wouldn't work. But
yeah, I mean, and again, this isn't like news, this is just she would be happy to do it, like, well, yeah, we'd all be happy to be in it.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to return to
yeah.
The next point, walk me through this, because this is this sounds similar to a news piece we had months ago about early editions of some of the classic Who scripts that had been found in a writer's storage.
Mm-hmm.
So take me through this 10th Planet story.
Well, I mean, so we did talk about this a few months ago, and I'm not entirely sure that this is a different story, but the way that this is being spun is really interesting to me, in that this is the episode 10th Planet, which was William Hartnell's last story, and we have this script now out in the public domain that doesn't have the Doctor regenerating at the end of the story. So that, you know, that's what's crazy and unique about this script. And we, you know, everyone obviously, like, the regeneration of the Doctor started with William Hartnell, and this just goes to, you know, how, like, obviously they had thought about his story arc far enough in advance that they hadn't considered a regeneration in there. Like, so it's crazy. Like, it really does bring up a lot of possibilities of, like, what were they thinking? What was going to happen with the next season or something?
Well, and this is a story that we've all kind of known, is that you know, originally the regeneration was just a way to save the show. It wasn't something that they had designed into it. So the fact that they wrote this episode or this series and didn't, you know, didn't include that at the end, you know, it's okay, well, we're going to keep going with William Hartnell. And then he decided to bow out, and it's like, okay, well, we've already got this script. It's a really good story. Let's go ahead and put that in there, but we need to figure out some way to keep it going. Yeah, you know, so it's not a huge revolutionary breakthrough, but it is kind of interesting to go back and see what the original script was, and, you know, just kind of get into their mind space and think, like, you know, what was it like at that point, saying, you know, how can we change the story to make it something that can continue after we lose our main actor?
I mean, could you imagine being in that situation? Like, oh, we have this great script. Like, oh, crap. Like, all right, let's just get a totally new guy to do it. And it's the same character. Like, that's the value of this for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how far along they were that they could just do this.
Yeah. It's just interesting. It's out there. I think it's online, available to read. I mean, we've just got the story here in the show notes. But, yeah, it's... Let's see. I think actually no. It's going to be included in the Quest for Peddler, which is the book that Michael Seeley is putting out, which you can pre-order right now. So
awesome.
Yeah. Then we've got the news about the Christmas special coming up. Yay, Christmas special! They recently had the script read through this past Wednesday. Depending on who you're listening to this, on September 4th, they did the read through, and there was an interview with Matt Smith talking about it. And everybody just seemed really excited about it, really happy. Matt Smith says that he is going to be wearing a wig since his hair isn't going to grow back. Apparently,
that is the biggest news item to come out of this.
Exactly.
His head.
But then they're going to start filming on September 8th. So Sunday previously, I guess, when you get this, maybe more so. Hello, future people.
Welcome to the world of tomorrow.
So, I mean, that's we should, now that they're going to start filming, we'll probably start seeing more news creep out and get leaked and get air quotes leaked. Yeah. So keep your ears open for that.
Yeah, and so if you ever thought that like people have to shave their head and gain 30 pounds to win an Oscar and all that, no. You can totally be on Doctor Who and just wear a wig. And that's what I got out of it.
That's if you're lucky you can wear a wig. Otherwise, you get a whole potato head. Yeah.
Well.
Then we've got some products that are coming out. The official 7th Doctor sweater is going to be coming out soon. And these are all hand-knit, actually.
Define official.
It is official. It's I think BBC is like part of this. Wait. It is Lavarsi, which is a scarf retailer, but they're in partnership with BBC Worldwide. So they put out the Fourth Doctor's like big long iconic scarf a couple years ago, and now they are putting out the Fourth Doctor's red scarf, which like apparently he wore for a little while toward the end of his reign. Like so. From the way that it seems to me is like they came up with this idea to like, let's do his next scarf. And then someone kind of said, why don't we do everything? Like, so it is official. It's with BBC Worldwide. They have the Fourth Doctor scarf, and they also have Sylvester McCoy's like question mark vest and a hanky.
Mm-hmm. I saw a couple cosplayers, people rocking the vest. I'm not sure where they had acquired them from or whether they actually went the route, as most people had been doing, and actually finding, you know, a couple of yarnsmiths and said, yeah, I'm going to give you a really horrible pattern, and I need you to make me a sweater. But no, I mean, I'm glad that they're sanctioning these things, and that's fine. I mean, there's a lot of people that'll just do it out of their own their love of it. But I'm hoping as they release these things and people start to play around them and stuff, it gets people to start to watch some of the other Doctors too.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm excited about, is the fact that it's something beyond the Fourth Doctor scarf. Yeah, it's not, hey, here's Tom Baker and the other six guys nobody cares about. Yeah, they're really starting to branch out and say, hey, look, we've got these other Doctors here that, you know, a lot of them are fan favorites. You know, Baker might be the favorite statistically, but, you know, I know there's some people that can't stand him, and there's some people that, you know, are just awfully fond of other Doctors.
Mm-hmm.
So just the fact that they're doing anything to draw attention to the rest of them is cool to me.
They can start selling John Pertwee's ruffly shirts and
I'd buy that.
Oh god, Troughton's crazy ass fur coat. It's not real fur, really. Fur is murder.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the last news item that we've got is they're going to be making a Doctor Who Risk board game. If you go to Forbidden Planet, you can pre-order the Dalek Invasion of Earth version of Risk. Where was this when I was 15 and had time to play it? It's right now, you can go on and pre-order it from Forbidden Planet. It's 37 pounds, so roughly 57 pounds or $57 American.
What forces are you stacking up against the Daleks country by country?
No, you have different versions of Daleks. You have the classic bronze, black, and silver, or the new paradigm red and yellow. And each one of you is seeking to invade Earth and come across these lost artifacts, but you can't really search for the artifacts until you get rid of the other Daleks.
Okay.
But then you've got the power cards, and the main one that they show is the Brig. So, I mean, you can't go wrong there.
The Brig's the main power card?
It's the main one that they show. There's a stack of them, and that's the one that's showing.
Okay, so. Yeah, I did see that. Okay.
Yeah. I knew I'd win Kira over there.
All right, now I'll buy the fracking game.
So, yeah, it's if you want to check it out, you know, you can go into our show notes, GallifreyPublicRadio.com/51, and just click on the link there. It'll take you straight to it, and you can pre-order it with just a couple of clicks, which I'm actually going to do here as soon as we stop recording.
All right, so that's Jay's subtle signal that he wants to wrap up so he can go buy games.
All right, yeah, well, that about does it for us this week. You know, we hope that you guys are enjoying this this walkthrough. It was a horrible and wretched idea by some sort of masochist to make us do this, to go through these episodes one by one.
Thanks, Mom.
But yeah, you know, it is great to actually be able to sit down and talk about, like, you know, like I mentioned before, it's rough to sit and watch these and then look around and be like, who can I discuss this with? Because it is too much to deal with on a one person basis. You know, you really need to be able to talk it through and, you know, have that group therapy kind of thing going. So, send us your feedback on this and let us know, you know, where you are in the process. Is this your first time watching through it? You know, do we need to get the suicide hotline going for you? Or have you watched this repeatedly and somehow staved off the suicide? But
I've hardened my soul.
Yeah. You have
tell
no,
us how you did it, please.
You have no soul. So let us know where you are on this thing, what you think about it, if there's anything that we've missed. Yeah, I know that later on we get into a lot of topics and stuff that can really bear a lot of discussion, but we don't seem to have a lot of that early on. It's all just kind of set up. But if there is something that you feel that we are missing, let us know, because we would love to be able to go back and talk about this kind of stuff. You can send us email at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can find us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio. We are on Facebook. We're on the iTunes, on the Stitcher Smart Radio. So any of those places you can leave us feedback. You can also go over to our website at GallifreyPublicRadio.com/51 for this episode and leave your comments on there. Start the discussion going.
Yeah, I would say start with GallifreyPublicRadio.com, and please continue leaving us feedback on iTunes, especially if it's positive, because that's like, please, because that stuff, like, they, like, if you wrote in 2 months ago, like, it doesn't count. Like, we're back to the bottom of iTunes.
Go back and do it again.
Yeah. So,
right.
Only if it's positive, again. I cannot emphasize this enough.
Well, make your notes, folks, that as we go through the next couple of weeks, we're going to try and take the remaining three episodes week by week. Because as we get into the thick of this, each episode really warrants an individual kind of take apart, so we're not going to condense them at all. So you can spread them out yourselves. If you're watching along with us, take your time.
Please do, because it's horrible trying to go through it all at once. All right. Well, this has been episode 51 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, I want to just go curl up and die somewhere.
And this is Melissa, on a lighter note, saying, about 37 minutes in, ladies, I think you can see Jack's junk. Just saying.
And this is Kira saying, I'm very sorry, but at about 15 minutes in, you're looking at Johnny's bare ass. But on a lighter note, it's the only time you have to see it.
I'm sorry for this. Why?
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
I'll see.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. Have something you need to say, something we got wrong, or something you just need to weigh in on? Send us an email at feedback@GallifreyPublicRadio.com. You can also find us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, on Stitcher Smart Radio under Gallifrey Public Radio. Find us on iTunes, where you can leave us comments and reviews. You can also head over to our homepage at GallifreyPublicRadio.com, where you can leave comments on each episode and get into discussions on the things that we bring up. You can also keep up to date on all the latest news and what's going on in the community. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2013.